Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Hey guys, it's Chloe here, back with another Upfront interview. You will have seen plenty about Bay FC since the NWSL season kicked off in the US. They are the new kids on the block, the West Coast's latest exciting expansion team, following hot on the heels of Angel City. Huge names have joined the team already, and the brains behind it all is an English woman. Lucy Rushton was hired last June as the club's first general manager, responsible for basically everything, from recruitment to dealing with agents and salaries to laying down the club's vision and identity. No small task there. It's the latter that I'm really interested in getting stuck into today with Lucy. How do you build a club from scratch? We'll talk about that and much more on today's Upfront. Let us know what you think on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Upfront_pod. Enjoy. Welcome to the pod, Lucy. Thank you so much for joining us from across the pond. How's life in San Jose? Is it better than here? Because the weather over here is shocking at the moment.
You know what? We've had quite a bit of rain here, and everyone told me, move to California, it never rains. Like, I'm like, it hasn't stopped raining for the last 3 weeks. But no, it's just getting to that now where it's sunny quite a lot. So I'm definitely starting to get the tan back. But I have to be honest, I haven't seen much of San Jose. I haven't seen much of San Francisco since I came here last July, just because I've just been working. So hopefully at some point, like, my family are looking to come over, I think like August this year. So okay. I'm targeting that as a time where I can actually maybe get out and actually see a little bit of San Jose and San Francisco.
There's a little bit of a difference from Reading, I suppose.
yes, it's very different to Reading.
Well, if we get stuck into your career at Bay FC, of course, this is a Bay FC's inaugural season in the NWSL. You're a brand new team, or an expansion team, as we like to call it, and as it's known in the States. You've got a handful of games under your belt now, but can you take us back to the very first when Bay FC beat Angel City 1-0 in front of 22,000 fans? I mean, how was that as an experience?
It was insane. Like, the day itself was just incredible. I don't think I felt as nervous in a game as I have in that one. I wanted it so badly for all of our staff, all of our players, all of the ownership group, all of our business operations staff. I wanted to win so much for them because of I've seen the work that everybody's put in over the last 9 months to get this club from where it was. I mean, 9 months ago we were nothing. We were just a piece of paper. And so it was incredible for the team to go out, play the way they did. Definitely wasn't the brand of football that we speak about and why we want to be in the long term, but the character they showed in that game, it was awesome, because I think you don't get that performance unless you have a team culture, a really good team culture. And I think that's something we speak about every single day at Bay, is the team culture that we want to have and the the kind of the group and the performance that we put in Angel City. You don't get that unless you just have buy-in and a real togetherness as a team. So to have kind of got that from the 8-week pre-season that we had, you know, we come together, 26 new players, new faces, new staff all come together in January on pre-season, and for it to end in that was incredible. I would say I've never felt so sick for 96 minutes. It was torture. The game itself was absolute torture. Obviously, it got worse when we went a goal up and we were hanging on. If anyone's seen the game, it was pretty much back to the wall stuff.
It was hairy.
And it was goal line clearances. It was incredible saves. Liz had an incredible game, our goalkeeper, and it was torture. And when the final whistle went, it wasn't so much celebration. It was kind of like relief feeling. Like, yeah, it was just like relief. But yeah, I felt very proud and just like very honoured to work with this group of people. And so it was special. It was really special. So yeah, it was, you quickly move on in football and you have to think about the next game. But it was a really special night for everybody involved.
I mean, it's such an unusual and sort of unique experience, I suppose, going into a club that's sort of not even established yet. You're literally starting from the ground up. I mean, what do you prioritise when you first get to the club? I mean, there's so many different things that sort of need to be sorted out quickly to, you know, to get a foothold in the games.
Yeah, I mean, when I joined, it was just me and then our CEO, Brady Stewart, who obviously manages everything on the business side. And I remember those early days and we were thinking about like what tagline should we have on the emails, and like it was just the crazy little things that whenever you're in a business you just take for granted. I think for me on the football side, the priority straight away was getting some staff around me to help with the player recruitment and scouting side of things. So quite quickly I brought in Matt Potter as kind of like he was in the consultancy role, he's now technical director. But then Austin Buchanan as well as director of scouting. And look, we knew that the most important thing in that period was just going to be player recruitment. So to bring in those guys really early, and they had really great level of experience within the women's game, was really important to me. Incredible people, but their knowledge base and their understanding of the market was fantastic. So I think first and foremost, I knew I needed to start building a staff that could then start taking off some of the weight of like how we were going to get the football operations side up and how we were going to get the players in. So that was most important. But then obviously watching players, just literally immersing ourselves in watching players and understanding the kind of player that we wanted at the club, and then finding players and getting step charts for where we wanted to go. You start thinking about, obviously it's a salary cap league here, so you obviously start thinking immediately about the roster build and the strategies around that, and that was going on in the background a lot. Getting the first piece of the jigsaw and who that player needed to be impacts everything else, and it was really important to do that. But we had to have a plan for options A, B, C, D, E, F, G. But if that didn't happen, if that did happen, so yeah, it was a lot of, in the early days, just gathering information, gathering intel, and really finding our way in terms of players.
I mean, a lot of our listeners here in the UK will probably know, I mean, Bay FC have done some absolute recent business in the transfer market. Some big signings from the WSL and beyond. Jem Beattie from Arsenal definitely picked up a few headlines over here. Asisat Shuala from Barcelona. Rachel Kundanagi.
I've had a lot of practice. It's a tough one to say.
It is a tough one. I do apologise to Rachel in advance for that. For a world record fee. And you often say sort of your strength is with people. So when you first spoke to these players, how did you sell the Bay FC dream to them when I suppose you're sort of still in the, you know, getting things up and running stage?
Yeah, really interesting conversations, because obviously you've got no history as a club. You've got no players in some instances to be able to talk about. You don't have a product to watch on the pitch, and so they can't see how you play. They've not seen Albertine, our head coach, before and how he plays. So really we spoke to them about our visions and our ambitions as a club, which, you know, were really about changing women's sports globally and how we wanted to change the game and set new standards in NWSL. We obviously spoke about our playing style and what we wanted that to be and how we were totally committed to that. But for us, it was really about identifying like big term of like what we wanted this club to stand for and how we felt every individual player would help contribute to that. We have an incredible ownership group. And when I would always speak to our players about them because they are our club. Like everything we do is representing them and their beliefs and their values. And they have these incredible ambitions, but they also are incredibly principled and valued about people and about culture and about people development. And so we would always touch on those things as well, because it's a real cornerstone of Bay FC and what we want to be.
You've obviously brought in loads of new signings, but also, you know, not just players, but staff across the board, obviously from different continents, have played in different leagues, different cultures and backgrounds. How do you kind of embed that vision into sort of the one Bay FC unique identity and style of play and things? I mean, how do you sort of collaborate all those ideas and put them into sort of the one Bay FC identity?
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a few people that were really involved in that and building that identity, and said the ownership group from day one, myself, Brady, who again was our CEO, Matt Potter when he came in as technical director. I think we all very quickly became very aligned and on what we knew. We had a very clear vision from day one about what we wanted this club to be and stand for. And so formulating that into a collection, say taking it from a collection of ideas and turning it into a document as such, it took time. It took a lot of wordsmithing, and we included our founding four in that, were heavily involved, and multiple other people at the club. And we came up with something that was really robust and really true to everything that we knew we wanted to be. I think it was quite organic how it came about, because I think everybody we hired was somebody that we knew had the same values and principles that were aligned to ultimately where we wanted the club to be. And so when those people were then in, the ideas and the way that we feel and speak as human beings were all very aligned. And so it was quite easy to get to that. Now, the playing style, again, very clear from day one. I think straight away, like, we were very, very intentful about the brand of football and the identity we wanted to have. Obviously, you need your head coach to come in then and really drive that and set the kind of nuances around that. But because we were so defined in that, it guided our scouting or a kind of a hiring process for the head coach, so that when that person came in, there was already that alignment there, and it was saying more about them, the nuances of the game.
I mean, Bay FC, you sort of mentioned there the founders. It's of course, I mean, the club's of course founded by four players: Brandy Chastain, Leslie Osborne, Brandy, who I just saw in the Copper 71 documentary, Danielle Slatten, Ali Wagner. I mean, how is it working with so many former players who have all had their sort of own experiences? Presumably, I'm guessing, you know, these are powerhouse women, incredibly strong opinions on how the team should play. How have you sort of brought that all together?
No, I mean, they've been a huge asset to us, and we're so lucky to have them. They do a lot of work for the club. Danielle has a role within the club now in the community as well, and does a lot of great stuff there. But I think we just use them as assets in terms of like their experiences in the games and how they can help us communicate with players, and how they can kind of give us kind of insights from their time in the game. They've left me to it when it comes to scouting players and building the team. So that's nice as a GM to be able to be given that freedom and license. But I think we just have a mutual trust and respect for each other, to know that we can have conversations and have opinions and, you know, help each other and advise each other in different ways. And say they've been nothing but incredible for the club.
And obviously they brought you in, absolutely entrusted the club with in your very capable, experienced hands. How did they sell the Bay FC dream to you? And did they promise you one of those incredibly epic baseball jackets? Because I think everyone over here wants one.
You know what? Like that jacket has just become like, yeah, it's just gone crazy. Like,
it's exploded. It's like viral over here. Like, yeah, you need to start stocking it.
I know. I keep telling the club, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't sell the jacket. We need to keep it. But no, like, I think my first calls actually were with Alan Waxman. Sorry, I can't talk today. The club's owner. And it was him who sold me totally on the project. As I said earlier, like, the ambitions that he has and that Sixth Street have for this club in terms of where we want it to be as a global brand, but changing the women's game globally, not just football, changing women's sports globally. And their passion to raise the bar, to improve standards, to put women at the forefront of the sport and to make Bay a part of that. And it was never about Bay just being Bay's gonna do this, Bay's gonna do that. It was about how can we at Bay help NWSL as a whole improve its standards, which is going to help other leagues look at NWSL and improve its standards, which is going to help women's sports globally. I think to have that level of ambition is just, it caught me straight away. But say the most important thing was, despite that level of ambition, was the absolute passion for doing it the right way and for believing in people and culture and environment. And everybody talks about it. Everybody talks about having a great culture and doing things right, but the real intent that they have and that they have shown since then to deliver on that is just been, you couldn't walk away from that. It was just compelling. And, you know, obviously when you come into any club, you know, you want to know that you're going to have an opportunity to be impactful and successful. And I felt that this club just had the best opportunity to do that. So, yeah, it was a no-brainer for me once I'd spoken to Alan and heard about everything that he envisioned for this club and beyond. And, yeah, very grateful for the opportunity to be able to lead and drive such an incredible organisation.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Well, Jem Beattie is obviously one of your big signings. We were fortunate enough to have her on the pod not too long ago when she was obviously still with Arsenal. And she was such a big character, such a big personality, like big energy, seriously funny as well. But what was it for you guys that sort of, why you targeted Jen in a way? I mean, it's kind of easy to see, like she's such an amazing person. But yeah, from your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you just nailed it from the personal side there. I mean, yeah, Jen's awesome. Such a great character. She's got some decent banter, I guess. Give or take. First and foremost, again, incredible human being. What she offered us was so many different things, actually, on the pitch and off the pitch. I think at the time we were looking for somebody with experience and probably more of a leadership role and veteran centre-back, which Jen, obviously, with her experience at Arsenal, like nobody's lived...
A veteran centre-back?
I have, and I think she's caned me for it as well. I've got a veteran, right? That makes me sound well old. Like, well, it's a positive. But no, what that brings on the pitch to us at the time, you know, we're quite a young group, I think, when we were looking for Jen's role. We're quite a young team and felt we needed someone with that real experience and leadership. I think Jen has that in abundance. Obviously, she's played in some insanely big games and been around and seen everything. And so for her to be able to bring those insights and experiences to what was a young team and an expansion team, which is bringing a load of people together for the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, we knew she would add value there. On the pitch, just what she, how she plays the game is what we stand for as a club. You know, we want to be, we want to play the brand of football that Jen has the ability to play. So she ticked every box for us on the pitch as well. So it was kind of like a, just a perfect fit, it felt at the time. And I think, you know, the stage of her career that she was at, she was looking for that new challenge as well, and ready to try something different. And so everything kind of aligned and it worked out really well.
So Jen's obviously one of the big personalities in the changing room, but who else is sort of, you know, the one sort of playing the music, sort of making it lively, cracking jokes, that kind of causing mischief, that kind of thing? You able to give us a sneak peek about who the troublemakers are?
We don't have any troublemakers. We definitely don't have. They're all angels. They're all angels. No, we have so many good personalities in our group. The music's always bad, so I'm not going to blame anybody for that, because it just seems to be a different version of bad every day. I think
what kind of tunes are we playing? What's so bad about them?
Well, look, it's just not my. It's like I like soppy romantic love songs, so it's never going to please me. So like to the rest of the world, they probably say it's great, but to me, I'm just like, what's this? Like, it's not Westlife. Like,
yeah,
so
yeah.
If it's not Westlife, I'm not happy, basically. Which is very sad on my part. So there you go. But no, like, I think you know, Rachel Kundanangi, and Assi Sat have come in, and they have great personalities. I think some of our young rookies, Caroline Conti, she's got a real presence about her. She's got a real kind of vibe to her. Always positive, always happy, always upbeat. But honestly, everyone is just. And what was really nice, really early, was to see that there was never like little cliques going on. There were never just the same people sat together. It was every day, it was a different group of people going out and kind of doing things. And we had a few kind of team events like in the pre-season. And that's where you see different personalities come out. We found out we had a load of golfers here who
okay.
I mean, to be fair, Jen's one of them. She's a good golfer, but we've got a few golfers at the club and we've got a few definite not golfers. but I think like it's just been really nice to see everyone have their, and we talk about it here all the time, be your true authentic self. And it's been really nice to see the different personalities kind of come out, and it's a really nice blend.
Well, this isn't the first time you've been part of an expansion team. You were with Atlanta United's head of technical recruitment and analysis, and they were considered one of the MLS's most successful expansion sides. So what did you learn from that experience that you've kind of taken into BFC?
Yeah, I think that was quite a lot from the roster build kind of strategy that I kind of took. I think we had quite a defined way that we did it at Atlanta, and that was, I think we did it quite well. And so I took like the little bits and pieces that I'd learned from that in terms of like, you know, needing to the core of your team and where to maybe recruit them from, how to kind of get your internationals in and where they needed to be in the roster compared to the other players. There was a lot around the strategy of the build that I took from Atlanta. I think the biggest thing I took from Atlanta as well, though, was just, I think we had success because of the culture that we created there. The players that we brought in, who were very bought into the style of play and the very defined style of play we had, it just mirrored perfectly. But they were all good, really good guys. And so we had a locker room that was really kind of together and cultured. And that was the biggest learning from me, that like, if you get good people, the rest will look after itself. And you get good people who can play the brand of football you want to play, the coaching's going to take care of that side of things, and you're going to create a good vibe in the locker room. That's the most important thing. So there was a lot in terms of the strategy and build out, as I said, but I think that was the biggest takeaway for me.
And you were also just the second woman in MLS history to be a general manager of a club when you moved to DC United. It was a difficult spell for the club, but did you find that you learned a lot about yourself during that period, sort of the challenges that arose?
Oh, 100%. Like, I think you learn most about yourself in times of difficulty, right? It's easy when you're successful. I think when you face challenges is when you actually learn about yourself. I think, you know, what I took from that massively was that a confidence to be a GM. It was my first time in the role, and I'm forever grateful for the opportunity I was given there, because it opened so many doors. And I guess, gave me the insights into this career, which, having lived that, I come away really confident that I could do the job. But definitely just learned a lot about, I think we all think we're really principled and valued as people. And I think I really learned that I truly am. Loyalty, the things that are important to me, loyalty, respect, being responsible, being accountable, but just being very people driven are the things that I kind of confirmed that I was, but also it showed me and reinforced the importance of those things to me as well. So I learned so much about how I wanted to handle business, I think, and how I maybe didn't want to handle business. And just, I guess, that people are the most important thing. I think that's what DC really taught me. And we had some good, like, we had a difficult spell as a club in terms of results. But one thing we still had was we had a really good culture, and we had staff who were together and staff who were bought into each other. And it really showed me the value of that, and how that if you can get that right, like, then you're at least going to give yourself a chance. So, yeah, so, I mean, I learned so much from that experience. And I think Bay have probably benefited from it and got a better version of me than I was maybe going in there as well, because you have to learn from those experiences and get better.
So going forwards then with Bay FC, what's the kind of next area of development that you see sort of happening for the club?
We have to be successful. We have to try and build our identity on the pitch. I think that's important. You know, we've spoken a lot about what we want to be and the brand of football we want to have, and it's going to take time for that to materialise. But I think to really now work on continuing our pipeline of players that come through and ensure that we can continue that identity is important. I know we've got a lot of desire to start looking at the youth game and looking at how we can build an academy to support the first team. So I think that's going to be something that becomes more of a focus as we've now given ourselves time to breathe with getting the first team up and running and then look into that. And I think just continuing to build links with the community as well and to do our work there is really important. We've got a lot that we're doing behind the scenes in terms of medical and performance, data and analytics and scout and recruitment, like all of those processes that now we'll look to build out and really build our infrastructure around. But I think, you know, community is really important to us and academy as well. Training facility to come as well. You know, we want to build our own training facility and have our own home. That's been something from day one that we've been very intentful on. So we're doing a lot of work around that at the moment and looking at locations where we can say put a proper mark down and have a home.
So it sounds like quite a short to-do list then, really.
Yeah, not much. Yeah. Not really, yeah, I'll just put my feet up most nights.
Do you reckon we'll ever see Bay FC come over to the UK? Because there's always sort of talks about, you know, doing like sort of summer tours or winter tours and things like that. And, you know, I'm not saying that just to try and get the jackets over here, but I think there'd definitely be an appetite for it.
No, 100%. I think it's something that we really want to do. We're really keen to be a part of those international tournaments. And, you know, it's something that whether it's how host teams over here in San Francisco, San Jose, or come to England ourselves, I think that would be incredible. I think we'd be missing out on something if we didn't try and do that, because I think on both sides, I think there'd be a lot of interest from both kind of sets of fans to do something. So, yeah, watch this space.
Okay, heard it here first. Got the exclusive. I just briefly wanted to ask you a little bit about your old club, Reading. Sort of seeing what's going on there generally must be sort of a little bit heartbreaking, I suppose. It's heartbreaking for all of us, but obviously with your history with the club. And of course, the women's team has kind of bore the brunt of what's happened with the men's side. When you left Reading, Kelly Chambers said that she was having to fulfil so many different roles at the club, both as head coach and director of football. She's now sporting director for, obviously, the Utah Royals, one of your rivals, in fact.
It's crazy, isn't it? What a small world. Like, you know what? Me and Kelly worked at Reading Football Club at the same time, like, in obviously different capacities. And we lived in Reading together probably for 30 years, like, and never met each other until we got to the draft in Anaheim in California in December and working for two NWSL clubs. So how crazy that...
What are the odds?
We said it, like, two girls from Reading have wound up in NWSL in these crazy roles for expansion teams. So, yeah, it's a small world. Football's a small world, right?
Oh my God, yeah. I'm constantly bumping into people that I've sort of known for years and years and years in various different capacities that have all changed over the years. So, yeah. But yeah, just sort of going back to your time with Reading, sort of just want to sort of get a little bit of a thought, I suppose, from you about sort of how you see the situation with Reading at the moment, and yeah, whether you think the sort of WSL, I suppose, as a sort of susceptibility, I suppose, with the women's teams that are being tied to the men's teams.
Yeah, I mean, say Reading will always hold a special place in my heart. Always, it's, you know, the team I supported, the team I worked for. And it's been devastating to see how the club's kind of plighted in recent years, and today and where it is now is really sad to see. And I'm hoping they get the investment they need and the change in ownership that they obviously need to become a sustainable club again. I think that, as you say, that tie with the women's, the men's team, I think, you know, is, you know, we're a standalone club, so we're never going to be impacted by that. And I think that's, it can be a plus or minus to be affiliated with a men's team, because, I mean, obviously if the team's successful, you probably benefit from the revenue you get from that. If not, then you're going to hurt with it as well. And I think it's a different model in England, right, where, you know, your revenue impacts and drives your salaries in that respect. You know, it's very different over here. We have a salary cap as a team, and so it's not impacted by the financial revenue of the club or a sister club or anything. So I think, you know, it can definitely have its pros and cons. I think first and foremost, I really hope that Reading's able to figure itself out, because it's a great club. It's a great club with a great history, a great fan base and a great setup. So yeah, hopefully both the men's and the women's team can get back to where it was and can start kind of seeing some success both on and off the pitch again.
And would you say sort of that the WSL is only just starting to catch up with the NWSL in terms of sort of the infrastructure with scouting and player recruitment?
You know what? It's a really interesting one, because I think, like, if you look at the very top clubs in WSL, right, like, you know, the quality of the player and the depth of their teams and their setups and their infrastructures are incredible. And I've visited some of the training facilities, and they're incredible. And I mean, I've, you know, spent many time in the men's game, in men's facilities, and they're right up there. I think what NWSL probably has different is just a consistency across all 12 teams, all 14 teams now, all 14 teams in the league, which I don't think you yet see in WSL or any of the other European leagues. I think you have your powerhouse clubs there and the rest are kind of still trying to catch up. Whereas in NWSL, it feels like a bit more of a parity and that every team is of a similar kind of level. So I'd say that, and in terms of infrastructure though, here, like, I still feel that we're very underwhelmed in terms of maybe those areas of scouting and recruitment, data and analysis. Some clubs do it better than others and are getting there, but I still think we've got a way to go as well. And I think that's probably across the whole of the women's game, because it's probably not had the resource and the financial backing it needs in those areas yet. But obviously now, as TV revenue goes up and ticket sales go up, I think those are the areas we'll start to see more investment in, especially now, you know, with transfer fees as well. You know, as soon as you start spending the money that we're seeing on players and transfer fees, it demands a more robust process. It demands more kind of infrastructure and setup to make sure that you're managing those processes better. So that's what we're driving for as well. And I hope that our signing and transfer of Rachel helps other clubs get to that stage as well, and helps other clubs invest in the same way. I think, you know, a few weeks after ours, you saw Orlando with Barbara Banda, and it's another huge signing. And hopefully that, you know, those two signings now kind of stem the path going forwards as well for all clubs.
Definitely setting trends. And I suppose it sort of goes back to what you were saying about the sort of the founders and the investors in BFC, and sort of how they've got this genuine, you know, want to have this authentic vision for the club and sort of to see it progress and the wider game progress, I suppose. But yeah, I think, I mean, finally from us, I appreciate you've got so many different things to be getting on with, some of those, you know, very tiny tasks on the to-do list that you just mentioned. But what does the future look like for BFC sort of in the next year, 5 years, 10 years?
I've been doing a lot of this. So obviously this year, the priority just, you know, is finding our feet in NWSL, making sure that we're competitive you know, if we can make the playoffs, I think that's a really successful season for us. When I think about 5 years, 10 years, that's our big vision stuff. That's how are we impacting the game and how have we changed women's sports globally, you know, whether that is from data and analysis, scouting and recruitment, like medical and performance being a massive one, you know, player care is so important to us. And when I think of like 10 years time, I think I'd like to think of where the women's game is in as a whole and how Bay FC have tried to contribute to that and helped kind of push the needle in those areas. So hopefully we're sat here talking about, you know, the time when Bay FC paid only $800,000 for Rachel Kundanandji, and mm-hmm. you know, we're now talking about $1 million player signings. You know, that's where we want the women's game to go, and hopefully everything around it in terms of the infrastructures, the training facilities, the staffing are things that we're again looking back and going, God, do you remember when there was no staff? Do you remember when scouting processes weren't this and that? And average attendances are now what you're seeing at Arsenal every week. That's standard. So, Bay, we want to contribute to that. And I hope in 10 years' time we can look back and say, yeah, we did contribute. And that's how we left our legacy in the game.
Oh, well, we'll definitely have to have you on in a few years' time to sort of see, you know, where
you are.
See where we are. Yeah, sort of see where the strategy is, see whether those jackets have sort of reached any of our shops over here, definitely.
I'll tell you what, my mum and dad keep asking me to bring one home with them, so one might make its way to England sooner rather than later. But it'll be me giving up my jacket. I'll have to give up my jacket to give it to my parents or my sister or something, so.
Oh my God, amazing. Well, yeah, I mean, if you've got any space in your suitcase, definitely send a couple for myself and Rachel, because we would love to be wearing the BFC jackets, exclusive jackets, straight from the camp. But Lucy, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you've got such a busy workload and so many things to be getting on with, but really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us. Thank you.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. And yeah, keep watching. I know that you can watch, I only found this out the other day, you can watch all NWSL games internationally for free on the NWSL website. Well, it's through a link on the NWSL website, so you can watch every Bay FC game, so no one's got any excuses now.
Well, 100%. Listeners, you've heard it here. Lucy said, go and watch some NWSL. Obviously, you know, still watch the WSL, but the NWSL is out there.
There's definitely no time clash. You're not going to miss any WSL games watching NWSL. So you're 100%.
I mean, from Saturday, you can probably watch a WSL game at 2 o'clock and you can stay up till about 10 o'clock at night and watch an NWSL. So that's a great day.
There you go.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.